It's your Tuesday daily delivery. I am Michael Rand. Hope you guys are having a great day out there. Hope you guys got some sleep. I don't know if I got as much as I might have wanted, but maybe I got enough that I needed because I, like you, probably a lot of you, stayed up late watching Timberwolves Nuggets, a systematic dismantling by Minnesota, 106-80. Let that sink in. 106-80 in game two in Denver. Wolves up 2-0 in the series, 6-0 in the playoffs so far. We will talk a lot more about that here in just a minute, but let those numbers sink in. 106-80. That's a lot. Twins won again. We'll get to that towards the end of the show, in addition to some of your comments yesterday where I asked for them on how you, as a Twins fan, are coping with the departure of Bally Sports North from Comcast Xfinity. A lot of really thoughtful, good responses on, A, some practical tips on what you're doing to kind of stay connected to a team that a lot of you love, that you've watched for decades, and also, you know, the kind of taking the pulse of the anger and sadness that people have if they, you know, suddenly are cut off from that with their cable provider. John Marthaler will join me here in the middle of the show to talk soccer, Minnesota United, and a little bit of 20 years ago Gopher basketball in that segment as well. Don't know how we got there. Actually, I do know how we got there, but I hope you enjoy the soccer talk, a lot of good insights on Minnesota United and their excellent start to the season, but also a little bit of whimsy towards the end of that segment. First, though, what did I miss? Like I said, we are going Wolves heavy right now. No surprise. The talk of the NBA world right now, it feels like, is the Wolves, their dominance in game two, again, 106-80. And listen, we are not used to this, right? We are not used to this level of domination. Just watching social media all night, people are like, what is going on here? My group text to one of my friends, like, you guys, what am I watching here? As the Wolves took a 61-35 halftime lead, 26-point halftime lead, and really didn't give anything back in the second half. It was kind of a, you know, it wasn't a cruise to the finish because they were still playing hard, still playing focused basketball, but never really felt like they were threatened the rest of the way after opening that big lead in the second quarter when Denver just looked shook, right? Denver looked shook, and we'll get to that in a minute, but just this idea of the Wolves being this good. I don't think people aren't ready for this, or people are ready for it, but they are not used to it in this market. Unless you watched a whole bunch of Lynx basketball in the mid to, you know, early, probably the whole decade of the 2010s, right? Like 2011 through 2017, when they won four championships, went to the finals a couple more times. They were a dominant team. This is a team that hasn't accomplished all of that yet, of course, but In terms of Minnesota sports teams, we are not used to seeing a team play like the Timberwolves, which is a very good team with a transcendent star that is playing its best, that is peaking in the playoffs, that is playing its absolute best basketball in the playoffs. We're not used to seeing Minnesota teams rise to that level. We saw it like a little bit last year, right, with the Twins when they won that playoff series. But it never quite felt like they were so dominant that they were just clearly better than the opponent. That is what is happening right here. That is an unusual feeling. And I think people, you know, just reading everything, people are just like, what is this? What is going on here? How do we explain all of this? And I think some people are still like, okay, well, what's the catch? And I admit, I got stuck in that mode a little bit. Like, what's the catch? When is this all going to kind of come crashing down, right? Like, you figure, okay, Chris Finch, head coach, he got hurt at the end of game four, a sweep of the Suns as the Wolves are, you know, showing up in all their glory, winning that series in a sweep. Chris Finch gets hurt, and you're like, okay, is this the thing that's going to turn the momentum the other way? And then they come out in game one in Denver and win in Denver. Great game. That was a great game. That was a battle. That was a great game. That was two teams going at it. Anthony Edwards just became, on that night, the best player on the court, would not let the Wolves lose. A lot of good supporting cast, things like that. But that was the story of game one. So you're like, okay, they can work around this. Mike Anori standing up, doing the things on the sideline as, you know, acting almost like the head coach, but Chris Finch, you know, right behind him, you know, still calling the shots, still heavy in the communication, heavy in the game plan, things like that. So you've got that. So you got that out of the way. You're like, okay, this is still going to be okay. This is a sideshow. This is, you know, something that is a distraction, kind of like the ownership stuff that's going on in the background. It's like, hey, is that going to be a distraction? No, that's okay. So going into game two, it was like, okay, suddenly Rudy Gobert, questionable. We find that out Monday. Rudy Gobert was questionable for the game. Weren't sure if he was going to play. Birth of his first child that day. They're trying to figure out, can we get him back from wherever he is, from Minneapolis to back here to in Denver to play in this game? Turns out they can't. You know, it's the timing doesn't work. And, you know, honestly, if you've been through the birth of a child, we have three kids. My wife and I have three kids. Like, all of those things from the husband's perspective, from the man's perspective, are, you know, we're doing 1/100th of the work, and even that feels like it's been a day, right? It's been a day. So Rudy Gobert trying to play after that would have been somewhat of an ask anyway. So they're talking about logistics, things like that. There's wind in Denver. You can't get Rudy Gobert to Denver. So you're like, okay, is this the thing? And by the way, 100%, 1,000% support Rudy Gobert. He did exactly what he should have done. You've got to be there when your kids are born. It's 100% no-brainer. I'm glad he had the support of teammates. I'm glad this wasn't even a question within the team. This was 100% the right thing for him to do. You know, I'm sure in a perfect world for him, he would have played in the game and been there for the birth of his child. But if you've got to choose one or the other, obviously, this is a life moment. This is something that you will never get back. A playoff game is important in a certain context, but it is not the life event of the century. So he does the right thing. He has the support of his teammates, but he can't make it back for the game. You're thinking, okay, even if you are of the mind that he did exactly the right thing, which of course I am, I've already said that, then you're thinking, okay, well, from a basketball perspective, is this the thing that stops the team's momentum? Is this the thing that makes it kind of twist around to be like, okay, didn't have Gobert, you know, at a deficit in game two, Denver's going to be able to do more things on offense, things like that. Is this where momentum shifts on this magical run? And instead, they go out and absolutely smash Denver by 26 points. The defense could not have been better, even without the likely defensive player of the year in the lineup. That, to me, says, hey, this is a team that is cohesive. This is a team that has Rudy Gobert's back. Now he's going to be able to come back and be like, you guys, that was amazing. Now let me become part of this again. Let me support this again. Let's go get this. He's going to be fresher. He's not going to feel like he got rushed back. He's not going to feel like he had to pick and choose these major things in his life. He got to do the thing that he wanted, needed to do, absolutely should have done, and the Wolves had his back. So instead of this being a moment where momentum pivots, momentum only grows stronger even without Rudy Gobert. So this game, the perimeter defense was suffocating. Jamal Murray was absolutely 100%, 1,000% frustrated. You saw him, he threw the heat pack on the floor. Just unbelievable loss of composure there. And it looked like a lot of film showing maybe he threw a towel not too long before that as well. Interesting to see what the fallout for that will be. It didn't get caught in the moment, so no technical foul, no nothing like that in the moment. But wondering what will come of that right now, because he absolutely lost his composure in this game because he was getting closely guarded, because the Wolves were giving him no space, because he thought he kept getting fouled. And probably, you know, one or two of them, maybe you could have called fouls. They were really letting him play on both ends. And by the way, by the end of the game, the Wolves had 20 fouls called on them. Denver had 14 fouls called on him. So maybe Denver needs to do a better job of not losing their composure. You had Michael Malone, their head coach, running onto the court protesting a call. I think like Ant was protesting the same call in the other direction. He's screaming at the officials like they just completely lost their heads, and a lot of that was what the Wolves were doing to them. Like, these are the defending champs. This is a team that didn't face a ton of adversity last year in going through the entire romp to an NBA Finals. This is a team that is facing tons of adversity right now, and they are not responding to it well at all. Let's play a little clip right now, by the way, from Michael Malone, Denver coach, on what he saw in the locker room and kind of their perspective after game two.
You know, it was a very, very quiet locker room. And, you know, you can take that many different ways. I'm taking it as our guys are disappointed in our performance tonight, all the way across the board, you know, from myself all the way down to player number 18. We got our coach, we got our played. And you can feel sorry for yourself, or you can do whatever you can to try to be better come game three. And that's my focus, is rallying these guys to continue to fight. You know, no one said it was going to be easy. And right now we understand that.
Now, listen, from the Wolves' perspective, obviously the key to all this is defense, right? And even without Gobert on Monday, their defense was amazing. I thought their bigs did a really good job on Jokic. He had a tough night. Jamal Murray, you know, playing on less than two full legs. He's got that calf injury. He doesn't look like himself, but he's also getting put into a lot of uncomfortable situations. A lot of that is Jaden McDaniels, who will not give him an inch of space. A lot of that, too, is Nickeil Alexander-Walker. If there's an award for sixth man of the year in the NBA, Naz Reid won it this year. Naz Reid, by the way, had a very good game for the Wolves off the bench in game two as well. If there was an award for seventh man of the year, I think that's Nah. I think that's Nickeil Alexander-Walker. They wouldn't be able to do what they're doing right now without this airtight rotation. He is such a big part of that airtight rotation. His suffocating defense, his three-point shot making, his intensity on every possession. When you can kind of switch out, throw him on Jamal Murray for a possession, put Jaden McDaniels on him, throw Ant on there occasionally, just giving him a lot of different looks, a lot of fresh bodies, a lot of different frustrations for Jamal Murray, it mounted. He looked completely discombobulated, begging for calls, getting, you know, complaining. You know, like I said, Malone was doing it. Jokic looked out of his element. Nobody else really got it going for Denver. You know, he had Aaron Gordon going for a little while in the first half, you know, scoring wise, but he ended up with a terrible plus minus in this game. You know, I'm not surprising given the you know how lopsided the final score was, but Aaron Gordon finishes up a minus 33 in 33 minutes, a minus 33. Jamal Murray finishes the day shooting 3 for 18. 8 points. He did have 13 rebounds, but that's not the line you want from Jamal Murray. Jokic had 16 points, 16 rebounds, 8 assists, but also for 4 turnovers. Denver turning the ball over a lot, 16 in the game, a lot of those early on. Wolves just 12 turnovers. Ant had a great shooting night. Towns was great, 27 points for each of those guys. But like I said, the defense told the story, the composure told the story, the ability to just go full throttle for 48 minutes, not let off the gas, not say, hey, Denver, come back into this game. That was a huge key. So now where does this go from here? People, you know, like I said, the power of social media, like I tweeted last night, like I just kind of want to stay up and read all the good tweets. That was the feeling. Like everyone's just like talking about the Wolves. Everyone is excited about this. Everyone's like, what is going on right now? What in the name of Minnesota sports is going on here right now? And the only thing I can say is, you got to enjoy it while it's happening, right? Like, you never know how long this is going to last. You never know what might happen next. Denver's a really good team. This series is coming back here Friday. There is no givens that the Wolves are going to win Friday. They look like the better team right now. They certainly are the more confident team right now, but series can change. What I say is enjoy this in the moment. We don't get this very often. We don't get it very often at all. Enjoy this in the moment, and yeah, we'll see where things head from here, but my goodness, just wanted to stay up, read the tweets, everyone talking about the Wolves right now, everybody talking about how great this feels, how unusual this feels. Maybe we got to get used to it. As I told Royce on Monday's show, we never seem to get to enough Minnesota United talk on that particular version of Daily Delivery. But thankfully, we have John Marthaler with us today to rectify that problem. John, how you doing?
Not too bad. How you doing, Mike?
I'm pretty good. Maybe not as good as the Loons, though. They just beat Atlanta over the weekend, and seems like they've been doing a lot of that lately. Tell me more about what's going well for this squad right now.
Well, they've won 3 in a row, and I think the most impressive thing, or the thing that everyone will point to, is that 2 of them were on the road, on, you know, sort of long road trips down to the southeast. So they have to feel good about that. It's kind of interesting that they had 2 road games that they actually felt pretty good about, and in the middle they won a home game against Kansas City, which is, you know, sort of one of the nearest teams to them, and they felt terrible about that one. All the quotes post game were, basically, yeah, we won, but we're sorry about this was bad. Nobody, this was awful. We're sorry about this. So I don't, while they've won three games in a row, I don't think that anybody involved with the team is going to say, yeah, you know, we definitely are world beaters. We're exactly the team we want to be in the future.
One thing that stood out to me, I think it was the most recent thing you wrote, maybe the second day piece after the Atlanta story, was just this crazy idea, John, that you kind of tailor your game plan to your opponent. You don't necessarily play the same way all the time, but hey, maybe sometimes on the road against a good team, you might have to play a little bit more direct, especially earlier in the game. Just get the ball the heck out of your third of the field to make sure you're not giving away any possession, any cheap, you know, cheap attack, any kind of sustained pressure, things like that. Tell me more about this newfangled idea of maybe tailoring your approach to what the moment dictates, because I'm not familiar with this.
Well, new manager Eric Ramsey, one of the words he uses most commonly when he's talking about his approach is pragmatic or pragmatism. And mm-hmm. It does not get more pragmatic than on the road, putting five defenders and four sort of midfielders in front of those defenders and kicking the ball long whenever you get a chance. That's not outside the box thinking. That is the box. That's exactly the box thinking right there. So it's not a new game plan in the history of soccer to say, we're going to put a lot of defenders on the field. We're going to go long. We're going to hope to get a long ball in behind the defense or something weird happening or a set piece and try to get a goal off that and just sort of see out the game by playing defensively. So I don't necessarily think you can give the Loons a lot of credit for inventing something new tactically, but at the same time, a couple of games in a row now, they've taken sort of that basic road game plan and effectively executed it. They won 3-0 in Charlotte a couple of weeks ago. They won 2-1 in Atlanta. Everything was going very smoothly in Atlanta until they gave up sort of the one mistake and a late goal, which was followed by 15 minutes of scrambling. But other than those 15 minutes, and even then, Eric Ramsey was saying that it probably looked worse than it felt on the sideline, I think was sort of what he was saying.
you were nodding your head vigorously like, yes, it did look worse. Thank you for noticing.
Yeah, you know, you were right. From where I was sitting, it looked truly like a scramble, but you know, maybe that's not how it works. But they've done it twice in a row. They gritted out a couple of wins. That was not always true. Certainly last year they had sort of a reputation of blowing late leads, and they not only held on to them but extended them in a couple of cases. So they have to feel good. They've got four road wins, which in six tries, whereas four road wins for an MLS season is, you know, a pretty normal record, not a good record, but a pretty normal road record for an MLS team.
I guess the thing about that impressed me was I got the impression that this won't be necessarily the game plan for every road game. Like, it's, you know, if you feel like a certain opponent might be more dangerous or you don't want to cede momentum in a certain case, but it's not like every single road game the game plan is the same, or even that it'll stay the same throughout the course of the entire game. Is that the impression that I should be getting?
Yeah, that is the impression that they've given, is that it's very much based on, as Ramsey says, it's very much based on who's playing well and who's available and what they do well. So you saw in the last couple of weeks, they felt like they had five defenders that could play effectively, and so they're going to play a system with five defenders instead of four. Are they going to stick with five for the rest of the year? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. They played four for a while, they played five for a while, and maybe that's just what they feel like they have the personnel to do. But you've seen something like this week where Robin Lloyd goes off halfway through the game with a minor injury. So maybe they look at it next week. They don't play this weekend. They don't play till the middle of next week. But if he's still out, they may look at that and say, you know, Robin Lloyd is hurt. Hassani Dotson has been out and they're not sure when he might be back. We don't have enough midfielders. We're going to play a different system just because that's who we have available. And I think it's that particular flexibility to say, here are the players we have. Here's what they do well. Let's have a system based on, as they keep saying, based on a certain set of principles, but we're going to play a different formation and a different sort of setup based on who we have available, rather than saying, here's our system. We're going to pick the best 11 guys we have that'll fit kind of into that system and just throw them out there. You saw that a lot with Dotson. This is going back to the Adrian Heath days, but sure. he would sort of slot in Hassani Dotson at fullback in the middle of midfield. He played him as a winger just so that it fit into the system. And, you know, maybe Hassani Dotson has the ability to do those things, but it was very much a case of trying to fit the player into the system rather than tailoring the system to fit who that he had available.
Speaking of who they've had available, Emmanuel Reynoso has not been available very much, and you wrote about him fairly recently as well. And just in terms of in the past when they've dealt with no Reynoso, which has probably been more than they would have cared to deal with no Reynoso in recent years, it's been very noticeable because so much of their attack is so much of what they want to do, you know, in terms of possession, in terms of just how they pick apart a defense, is based on his skill set and his kind of unique playmaking ability. That no longer feels like it's the case. They're winning without him, but they're also playing a way that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, we can't wait till he's back. Obviously, you always want players of that caliber on your team, but it doesn't seem like they are nearly as Reynoso dependent as they used to be.
Yeah, it's very true. What I sort of wrote was, for the longest time, their game plan, whether they were at home on the road, was get the ball to Ray. On the road, it was more, let's get the ball to Ray and he can counterattack. At home, it was, let's find ways to get Ray on the ball when we have the ball and we're in possession. But the Loons' plan was very much based on Reynoso. And when he wasn't there, the main question was, who is going to be Ray? Who is going to pretend? Who's going to be like the poor man's version of Ray for this game? Who can do that creating? That role is sort of gone from the team. They are playing in a different way, and it's certainly not based on one person. It's certainly not based on saying, well, if we're missing this creator, who are we going to get the ball to? They're just going to play the system. They're not going to worry. Their message all along with Reynoso has been out of sight, out of mind. If he doesn't want to be here, then we're moving past it. We're not thinking about it. And very much the vibe has changed from previous years when Reynoso hasn't been here. It's every week the question is, where's Ray? Is Ray coming back? When is he coming back? This year, it doesn't come up. It doesn't get mentioned right now, because not only because they're playing well, but because that particular role on the team isn't a thing. So if Reynoso does come back, it's very much what role could he fulfill on this team as well?
So no Reynoso, trying to adapt to this new system, they're winning a lot of games. What, in your estimation, is the secret sauce right now, or what is there to like right now? Not just in the results, but in the approach and in the, you know, the individual performances.
Well, I get the sense that the thing that fans are most excited about is sort of that flexibility, the tailoring the game plan to what they do well, tailoring the game plan to the players they have, that not just maybe the previous regime's way of looking at it and saying, we don't have the players that we need to execute what we're trying to do, to instead flip that on its head and say, here are the players we have, here's how we're going to use them to try to do what we want to do. That I think is the thing that is making people the most excited, just sort of the good vibes from this team right now. I, as far as what they're doing on the field that is giving them good results, it's really been very focused on defense, and they've been pretty good defensively. I think if you look at sort of the underlying numbers since Eric Ramsey took over, they're maybe tied for the second best defensive team in terms of expected goals. And I'm not talking about actual goals scored, because that's, you know, a little bit wobbly, but they've gotten, not only have they been playing good team defense like that, they've gotten a lot of good shot stopping from Dane St. Clair. He's been stopping shots real well. So it's all sort of coming together to be a team that sort of limits other teams and then is being opportunistic offensively.
I was going to say, they seem to be getting some goals from kind of all over the place, right?
They've scored three consecutive weeks on set pieces and from corner kicks, which on the one hand, you can look at it and say, well, that maybe that's a strength of this team, is that they're doing things well. And I think Ramsey was a little bit of pains in his post-game comments to stress, yeah, we do plan these things. It's not just random guys jumping up and the ball hits them in the head and goes in the net. They've gotten they've got some plans for it, and they've also gotten some really good deliveries from the corners from Yosef Rosales and Robin Lud. But in some sense, that's luck. In some sense, it's just a representation that they're finding different ways to get the ball in the net than just, you know, get the ball to the middle of the field and hopefully Teemu Pukki or whoever can get one into the back of the net.
And their other goal came from their sudden hot goal scorer, right?
Yeah, Tani Oluwaseyi has, I think he's got 5 for the year, but if you go on a per minute basis, I put this on social media, on a per minute basis in MLS this year, it's Lionel Messi number 1, Tani Oluwaseyi number 2, Luis Suarez number 3. So yeah, as we've all known, those three players are often known as the big three players of MLS. So I think we were all just lucky to have a superstar of this caliber in town here.
Joking aside, the vibes are good. Does it feel like, how sustainable are the vibes? Does it have like a charmed horseshoe 13-4 Vikings and Kevin O'Connell's first year kind of vibe to it? Or does it have a, hey, like I get that a lot of the players are the same, but they're doing different things and it the results match what you see on the field?
I think right now it's still a we'll see kind of vibe. Okay. One thing that Ramsey has stressed a lot, and I think this shows that he understands the league pretty well, even just having got here, is that MLS is a pretty close run league. It's not like European soccer where if you've got Manchester City playing Brighton or whatever, Brighton's a good team, but you 98% you're thinking Manchester City is going to win. The same for Real Madrid or Bayern Munich, sure, or Bayer Leverkusen or whatever this year. Those teams are probably going to win every week. In MLS, that's not really true. You've got teams that are, you look at the numbers and they're absolutely god-awful, like Austin, the worst soccer team in the history of the planet, according to the numbers, except they pulled off, you know, a couple of decent draws the last couple of weeks. San Jose has been terrible. They beat LAFC at home last week. It's the difference between the top and the bottom in the MLS is the difference between, like, 7th and 10th in a European league. It's just so much closer that you look at a team like Minnesota that has had a couple of good results. They've won 3 in a row, but what Ramsey has sort of stressed is when you're losing, you can't get too down in MLS. And when you're winning, conversely, you can't get too high up because things are always going to be close in MLS. So it's not like they can look at it and say, well, you know, they've won 3 in a row, this is a potential juggernaut and everything is going perfectly. We'll wait and see to see what this team looks like, not only in the next few weeks, but after they get to the summer when they've got other competitions going on. They've got sort of a break for international tournaments. They've got the League's Cup coming up where they're playing a team from Mexico and doing that whole thing. So trying to extrapolate just from the last three weeks out over the whole season, there's still a lot going on. And once they get to the summer, they'll have some more chances to change the team and make some personnel moves and stuff. So it's hard to make any predictions based on just the last few weeks. But again, you don't take the wins off the scoreboard either.
No, you don't. Sometimes you do, but in this case, you don't.
Only in the NCAA.
Only in NCAA basketball, and only when it really negatively impacts the Gophers. A couple more things. John Marthaler, one, I think you alluded to it a little bit, but transfer window. What I mean, if you're thinking about that, what can they do, you know, whether it's salary wise or roster spot wise, or and also like what should they be thinking? Are they light in a certain spot that they should be thinking about targeting once there is a little bit more opportunity for flexibility, or once they kind of know what they have here?
Well, you know, I think the most interesting thing that they'll have going on in the summer, it might be too early for Khalid Alamed, who's their new chief soccer officer. He might see it as too early to make big drastic changes at the top end of their roster and sort of those designated player spots. There's been some talk about MLS changing it a little bit to give teams a little more flexibility to add designated players and that sort of thing, and a little more money coming into this. And that's all, you know, a little bit unimportant, but I think the main thing is, will they be able to let Emmanuel Reynoso go this summer? Whether, you know, there's contract bio possibilities, more likely is they'll find somebody who wants him because he's an incredibly talented player, whatever his off-field problems. But if that does happen, if they do move on from Reynoso, if Reynoso doesn't come back, we don't know what's going to happen there. Will that will Elamad take the opportunity to try to make that swing this summer to get another designated player in for the team?
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Is there a parallel for Reynoso? I've been trying to think about that in terms of like Minnesota sports. Is it like, is he like Stefan Diggs when Diggs wanted to get traded? But Diggs kept playing by and large. Like, is there any kind of like, for people who don't follow soccer but follow Minnesota sports, like is there any other like comparable situation where a guy is just like, for another year, I'm just going to kind of be there, but then not be there, and you might not know why.
All right. So the one that popped into my head, and okay, this is going to mark me out as an old guy, and I'll mark you out as an old guy too, because you'll remember this. Mm-hmm. But the kind of thing that popped into my head was like Chris Humphreys as a Gopher basketball player. Like, he's a really good player. At the time, he was sort of the only good player the Gophers had. And so he would take, like, the Gophers would have 53 shots in a game and Humphreys would take 37 of them.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yep. The whole thing was like, well, we'll just give Chris Humphreys the ball and he'd shoot 12 for 27 and score 24 points. And it looks good in the box score, but also they lost by 30 to Michigan State or whatever. So I'm sort of making a joke and trying to remember some guys by going back to Chris Humphreys here, but it's a little bit like a basketball team that has one guy that's taking all the shots.
Okay.
When you take that guy out of the lineup, it changes how the team plays because they have to start spreading it around a little more. And so it's then when you sort of figure out what else do you have in terms of the depth for the team.
Who's this year's Vincent Greer then?
I think this year's Vincent Greer, if you have no follow-up questions, I think this year's Vincent Greer is Caden Clark.
Okay. I don't have any more follow-up questions to that.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad you don't have any follow-ups.
I don't. And I don't have any 90s musical reference for you this week either, which is disappointing, I know.
I'll take a Vincent Greer reference instead of a 90s
good.
Musical
that's good.
Reference.
That was early to mid-2000s, and they did make the tournament with Greer. That was the best of the Dan Munson years, which we could take that with a grain of salt.
I don't remember Vincent Greer very well, but what I do remember, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't make a jump shot in 4 years. Like, he never made a jump once. He got to the basket every time.
And he wasn't here for 4 years. I think he was a transfer, and he was a lefty.
Oh, was he a transfer guy?
He was a
lefty transfer portal.
Yes.
Ruining basketball even in 2005.
No, this was back in the good old days where it was always JUCO transfer. I think he was a JUCO transfer, but I'm gonna check that to make sure I'm right. Any more Loon's words of wisdom, John, before I let you go?
I only want to talk about mid-2000s Gopher basketball now.
Well, sorry. Then I think we're all done. Thanks, John.
Then we're at an end.
Thanks, John.
Great stuff from John. Postscript to our tangent at the end of that segment. The typical starting five for the Gophers in that 2004-2005 season, almost 20 years ago. Vincent Greer, of course, averaged 17.9 points. Jeff Hagan, Aaron Robinson, Dan Coleman, and Brent Lawson. That was your typical starting five. The other three guys that played a lot of minutes: Rico Tucker, Jason Stamper, and Spencer Tollickson. So that was the team that went 21-11, 10-6 in the Big Ten, made it to the NCAA tournament. We went on a tangent, but sometimes a tangent's good. You got to go on a tangent every once in a while. Let's finish with the cooler. I didn't want to leave this untouched because I asked yesterday on social media, the power of X. We've seen the power of X social media, Twitter, both in terms of all the Wolves commentary last night, but also I made a query yesterday, kind of how are you coping, Twins fans, with the loss of Bally Sports North on Comcast? Just kind of wanted to know what people are doing to kind of bridge that gap. Are you listening on the radio? What are you doing right now if you aren't able to watch the Twins? Because, you know, a lot of people just were you. This has been, you know, you're used to being able to see these games all the time. As of right now, I have 223 replies to that tweet. The engagement off the charts. Everybody telling me what they're up to. Some people, like I said, listening to the games on the radio. If you're a diehard and you're like, can't watch them right now. Let's see what happens. I'm just gonna listen to the games on WCCO or the Twins Radio Network. However you get the games like that. Some people have said, hey, I'm going to go to a sports bar and watch some of these games, although you got to go to the right ones because if you go to a bar that has Comcast Infinity, it's going to be blacked out. And I think bars are going to be suffering from that right now, especially during twin season, if that's all people want to watch right now. Some people have been going to the games in person, right? Twins have been in the middle of the homestand. They won again 3-1 last night. Simeon Woods Richardson, Royce dragged him on Monday's show, said, hey, this guy's not going to be a major league caliber starter. 6 shutout innings. He was excellent. They won 3-1 over the Mariners. So some people going to the game, some people watching this team that's now won 13 out of 14. They had that 12-game winning streak, lost Sunday to Boston, but got right back up and won yesterday against Seattle. So some people going to the games, but a lot of people just saying, you know what? The heck with this. I'm mad. I'm canceling cable. I don't care about the Twins anymore. I'm not going to watch. They are out of sight, out of mind. A lot of people saying, hey, I gave up on them a long time ago once we started playing this kind of whack-a-mole with what channels, what carriers are going to have Bally Sports North, which ones aren't. Some people just really sad right now, though, too, about kind of mourning the loss of this team. A lot of people saying, you know, this is all I want to do. My 90-year-old grandma, my 70-year-old mom, things like that. Like, this is what they want to do. The people who have had cable forever, who want to watch the games and saying, you know, we can't do this anymore. And again, a lot of people, too, finding, hey, we have other things in our lives that we can do, and quickly putting the Twins out of sight, out of mind. So I'll be curious to see what the overarching effect is. I think we've already seen some of this with the Twins not being available on some of the platforms they weren't available on before, but I think you're going to see a lot more of this now that they're not on the major cable carrier in Minnesota, the second largest cable distributor in the United States, that they're not able to watch Bally Sports North or any of the Bally channels on Comcast right now. If they don't settle this anytime soon, this is going to kind of further erode the fan base, further erode the kind of consciousness, the public consciousness of a team. Suddenly you find out, hey, I don't need to do this every night. I'll just check in on them periodically on social media. I'll check on them on the Score app, on GameView, on, you know, the MLB app, things like that. Like, suddenly you're not devoting a big chunk of your night to it. You're just kind of checking in on it. You become less passionate. You become less embedded with the team. You become less, immersed in this experience. And that's dangerous. Once you start to lose that, once people are like, hey, I'm all in on the Wolves. Who cares about the Twins? Once they are out of sight, out of mind, it's hard to get them back into sight, into mind. And so that is what I'm curious to see, how that plays out as the days, weeks, months, years come on with the Twins and how they are shown on TV or not shown on TV. But again, love all the feedback. Keep the tweets, keep the emails coming. I read all of them. I kind of like take it all in and kind of figure out what is going on here and what, you know, what does this mean for, you know, fandom sports fans in Minnesota. That will do it for me today. Expecting to have Ben Gessling, Vikings writer, on tomorrow's show. He was one of the people bewildered on Twitter, on social media yesterday, just like, what is going on with these Wolves? Ben's tweet, I'll bring it up, as kind of Chuck making me crack up. So watching a Minnesota team do this is like an out-of-body experience. I agree. This doesn't happen. So we'll talk a little Wolves with Ben, but mostly we'll talk Vikings, getting ready for a rookie minicamp. I haven't had Ben on since the draft, so I really want to pick his brain on just how J.J. McCarthy and Dallas Turner became Vikings, the process of that night, and where the Vikings go from here. So Ben on Wednesday's show. Chris Hine, Timberwolves beat writer, will certainly be on with me at some point this week, probably Thursday, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of Wolves talk on Friday, too, as we get ready for Game 3 back at Target Center. Until then, have a great rest of your Tuesday. I'm Michael Rand, back at it again tomorrow.